mean? Our money is dead, and we gotta pay back more than 100%. No wonder there are a lot of middle classes going under, when the ones above them gotta cover and come to collect. And many have no access to banking, making payments or saving, so more fees are taken. And every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait, welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Saturday, 12:05 p.m. till 1:30 these days, maybe a little longer in the days to come. And we have a lot going on this week. Well, except the usual. It's another week and another record high for Bitcoin. And in fact, I think it hit a record high last night, but it hit the record high again today, and something is over 18,000 now as we speak at airtime here. But Bitcoin wasn't alone this week. Ethereum hit an all-time high. Litecoin hit an all-time high. Ripple hit an all-time high. Much we discussed last Saturday. Go back to the podcast. You can get it there. Coming up in the hour and a half to come, we have Coinbase President Asif Hirji was on CNBC, and he was interviewed, leaving more questions than answers by the time it was over. And it's deja vu all over again as the CME Group launches their version of Bitcoin futures. Also, with all that and a surprise international studio guest is here with us today. And coming up in the last half hour, a Tampa Bay businesswoman's plan to enter the cryptocurrency business world. We'll get all that and your latest Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and blockchain news as we work our way around the hour and a half, as well as around the panel as we go in here today. And in no particular order other than they're sitting from my right to left, we will go to and, of course, as usual, Andy, a.k.a. Goldbug1, the TradingView.com columnist, putting interesting charts up today. We'll get to in a little while later. But good afternoon, Andy. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Henry. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and by the way, what's the count now? Is it over 13,000 now or something like that?
That is correct, 13,500.
All right. Not that anybody's really keeping track of that.
Except for you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to move the other panelist to his right all the way around because we're on video now, and watch that can of soda pop there. And we should have blocked this out probably a little bit more before we started. And we are streaming live on Twitter at Henry Rain Show. You should be able to see the whole studio right now. Last week we tried Facebook. This week it's going to be Twitter. And we have Augie in the studio now. Augie back as the contrarian. Hey, Augie, how are you?
I'm fine.
A special live guest here today, and we want to thank him for a special trip all the way, probably around the Pacific, or over the North America, or maybe came the other way, around Asia, Europe, all that. But we will say hello to him in just a second. Australia by way, I believe, of Kazakhstan in the last week or two, I think, somewhere I saw on the Facebook page. Alec Kirkoski, he is a private equities advisor with 21 years of experience in banking and financial markets. He launched Australia's first global cryptocurrency called Stash. I imagine he had a little bit of help with that. He brings 20 years of banking and capital markets experience. He previously worked at Westpac Private Bank and at Bank West as a senior commercial manager. He currently as a senior investment advisor at Black Pearl Capital Partners. I hope the internet profile was up to date as I put it together last night. Does that sound right, Alex?
It sounds right, guys. Thanks very much for having me here as well.
And we're happy to have you, too. We're going to hear more about Stash in the moments to come. And I don't know if he's got enough reach on his headset to go to one mic or the other. We got to get you an extension. Let's go to, finally, the last person on the panelist, at least for now, because we've got more people coming in later. And that's... And Alex, Telus Digital Assets, is with us today. Good afternoon, Alex.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Okay. I've got news for you. Well, as we said before, 2 hours is like last year when it comes to crypto. So the initial statement here, having successfully defended 16,000 earlier this week, Bitcoin regained and hit a record valuation of 17,800. Well, that was before we went to sleep last night, and now it's well over 18,000. Bitcoin spent the better part of last week trading sideways amid sharp gains. Alternative cryptocurrencies also performed well. Many rising upwards of 10% or hundreds of percent in some of the key ones. In the last week, Bitcoin managed to defend 16,000, recovered from a low of 15,700, and is performing well against its moving averages. Ethereum's price surged also on Thursday as the digital currency reached a high of $750, according to CoinMarketCap.com. That made it a market capitalization of $72.5 billion. I think we've reached for the entire cryptocurrency market somewhere about half a trillion dollars. Other cryptocurrencies that had stellar weeks, and that's no pun intended for Andy's column that we'll get to later in the show. Litecoin, of course, I think had to be considered the big winner, at one point being up about 300%, and then retreating to just a 200% gain in the week. And finally, we had Ripple that I guess it was about a 200-300% gain, too. Andy, you've been following all these on TradingView.com. What was your observations this week?
Well, you know how I felt it with Litecoin. Litecoin was probably more used to transfer money off Coinbase than it was to, you know, actually as an investment at this point. But, you know, that's my feelings on it. And when you have the when you have Charlie Lee Twitter out everybody that it's going to $5, you think to yourself, who is running this company?
For $5?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. He tweeted out, you know, be careful, everyone. It could go back to $5.
He didn't put a little smiley face on there?
No, but he has like a little superhero as his icon.
Was he at lunch with Augie that day? Was that it? Augie hijacked his Twitter account? Augie, tell us the truth now.
Well, of course, who do you trust, you know? I mean, I'm really curious about your guest today in studio on Dash, because the whole business of what supports and what creates these coins and who can do the same thing from coin to coin, from account to account, where do you get turf? I hear Dash is advertising free talk with Mark Edge, and so I'm of a mind that Dash is something of a commodity that will be more of a currency than a bondholder such as Bitcoin. What about that, Allie?
Is this in relation to Dash or Stash?
Well, I think he's talking about Dash when he's referring to Mark Edge and Free Talk Live.
That's right.
Stash is the currency that Alex initiated. But we'll take the question as it stands first.
Well, look, must be the accent, first and foremost. So
I love that accent.
No, thanks very much. Look, first and foremost, just want to thank everyone here for sort of having me on. Yes, it's been a whirlwind sort of trip coming from Singapore, and yes, I met some Kazakhstanis as well. It was actually the ministry, so I'll talk about that a bit later on. But look, my view in regards to sort of a couple of these bigger coins, it's based on emotion, I think, now. So you either got a rational view or an emotional view. It looks like it is an emotional view. So that's where I sort of see it. And look, you can't look at fundamentals because really there's none. So you are looking at it from a technical basis, and you know, you want to see that trend line. I think the trend line is looking pretty positive.
Mm-hmm. So with that, when bubbles pop, emotions go down the drain, right?
Well, look, when bubbles pop, people are pulling their hair out. So emotionally wise, maybe there's nothing left. But look, as we all know, no one's really an expert in this particular field to a particular degree, because it is sort of quite volatile. But the way that I see it is that you do have to have that rational approach.
In terms of the rational approach, is there any move to protect new ignorant investors, such as an insurance plan? You hit a bottom and you get some kind of recovery.
Sure. Using my experience from an equities perspective, they always say it's good to diversify. Personally, though, diversification is only for those who really haven't done their homework. So I sort of see it that if you're going to get into a few of these, whether it's positions or coins, you want to make sure that you do your homework. And homework being, you know, do you really understand what you're getting yourself firstly involved in? I don't look at it from a loss perspective. I look at it from a risk reward point of view.
Well, since we're pulling you off the news stories and into some personal advice here, let me reestablish you to the audience. So the voice you're hearing, unique to our circle, Alec Toposky, and I have to tell him, it was my hard of hearing that I was having trouble with the accent, because now that I have my headset on, you're clear as a bell.
Sure.
I do like what he said there, though, you know, and the trend's your friend. There is really no fundamental behind it. And the one thing that, you know, we always tell is take money off the table when you can, because you may not be able to take money off the table in the future.
So yeah. Alec has 20 years plus of experience as currently with Black Pearl Capital Partners. Is that just Australia-based, or are they global?
Yeah, so we are based specifically in Australia, and we do have an office in Hong Kong, and about to establish one, hopefully in Singapore as well, predominantly within the equity space. So we run a hedge fund, we're looking at sort of other avenues of investments that we see thematically are quite strong. And the crypto space, you know, that is an area that's not going to go away anyway.
All right. So, but of course, when you started 20 years ago, there was no cryptocurrency that we know of. And so what were you primarily focused, say the first half of your career? Because taking it up to 10 years, you're pretty much excluding the cryptocurrency.
Sure.
Were you stock equities? Were you in bonds at other kinds?
Yeah, look, I had to roll up. Yeah, look, I had to roll up the sleeves. I was only sort of 18 years old. Oh, well, actually 17 years old. So I lied on my application to sort of get into one of the sort of major banks. So I started off sort of very
Australians
small.
Lie?
Yeah, look, you know, if... I'm not going to go there, but look, it was more on the base that I wanted to get into this particular position, so I had to roll the sleeves up and just do a bit of hard yards. And that's for some advice for some sort of young people out there. Look, you've got to roll your sleeves up. Nothing's going to come
why on that
easy.
I'm teasing you now, because that's exactly what I did for my first job too. Although it wasn't quite as glamorous as probably whatever your job turned into, but to get a waiter job and being under 18, you had to serve liquor, so I was 18.
You got to do what you got to do, as I say. Yeah. So in fact, my actual first role was as a teller. So there's no harm in sort of saying that, but you know, that's where you sort of learn the ropes. And you know, there was quite a number of attractive ladies I used to talk to here and there, so I'll leave that alone as well.
Yeah, well, let's get back on topic here. If you want to find out more about Alec, the website is alect.com.au, alekt.com.au. And, okay, so we were in that section where you were more traditional investments in stocks, bonds. Any venture capital stuff?
Look, there's only been some VC stuff lately, but predominantly my sort of breakout was when I went into private banking. So private banking in Australia is probably much different to what it is in Asia and maybe in the US and North America as well. But, look, I was the youngest private banker for Westpac. I was about 20 at the time. So I was more focused. I think that's where I found sort of my edge and where I believe I could provide value. And this is the key aspect.
What type of clients were you working with then?
So they were sort of high net worth clients, more sort of your, there were some celebrities, a few stars.
What was the cutoff point for high net worth?
So look, if you were basically wholesale clients, so if you're 250K AUD per year in annual salary, or you had about 2.5 million in net assets.
And that was in 1990s money.
That was in, it was actually around the Olympics, 2000. So I remember that quite well, because the Olympics were in Sydney at that particular time. So I remember it quite well. But yeah, look, that was the dot-com era, and everyone once again was a professional. I just overheard one of the guys sort of speaking before about, look, you've got money invested, or there's money there on the table to be taken. I'm the kind of guy that likes to look at, you know, medium to long term, but also I understand that there's risks. I'd rather see money in my pocket than money sort of away in someone else's. So if there's money to be taken, look, I do look at that, and we move on to something else.
So someone comes to you now at that level. Are you still working with individual clients?
Yeah, of course, most definitely.
Okay. So now you have relatively broader kinds of sectors and assets you can put them into. So somebody walks in, say they're 50 years old, and they want you to take over their portfolio. What are you going to allocate for digital currencies?
By law, and this is within Australia only, ASIC, so the Australian Securities Investment Commission, it's very grey. Okay, it's very grey. So we can't really provide any type of personal advice. A lot of the conversations that we have with clients is based on the equities market, you know, whether it be, you know, specifically around bonds, stocks, derivatives, you name it. But
does your firm have an approved list of investments that you have to
buy? Most definitely. And look, we have our own as well, so which is our own fund of hedge fund. But I've got to be honest, the last, I wouldn't say 12 months, let's say the last 6 months, I would probably be getting at least 20 or 30 emails a day, social media hits via my Instagram account and also my Facebook account, all specific around the crypto space. Even clients looking at opening up, whether it be wallets, portfolios, you name it, it's all out there. And look, this is a bit more advice that I can give people out there. You've got to do your work. I know the guys that are here in the room are quite experienced in what they do, and they didn't get there just on the back of
it. Let's have you look out in the horizon, not necessarily the Australian, but you must have some sense of what's going on in the U.S. too.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so we have the futures started trading on the CBOE last week,
yep.
CME this week, and there's probably more on the horizon. NASDAQ's talking about it, and there's some others. So we have the futures. If and when do you see exchange-traded funds, ETFs, for cryptocurrencies being traded in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world?
Look, I think it's only a matter of time. And I know that that's a sort of general observation. But
less than a year?
Look, I'd probably say within the next 6 months. Look, I feel that the new year is going to bring new opportunity. It's a time where people sort of do freshen up. They start thinking about longer-term goals and maybe longer-term ways of engaging, these market makers, engaging sort of the general public in other ways of capitalizing on this crypto space. So I'd probably say within the next 6 months, we've got margin lending in place now as well, or some of it is about to, you know, come to fruition. So, you know, I see a lot of the sort of replications within the equity space going into that crypto space.
Okay. So I'm taking you on a path now, and just as a heads up to everybody else, because I want to see where you think we're going to go in short term. Then I want to talk about when and if the bubble pops and what might cause it. But so you're seeing exchange-traded funds within the next year. When the major financial firms, let me back that up, not your firm, not your individual clients, but in general, how do the major firms internally decide how they're going to allocate for, you know, this particular client, this age demographic or that age demographic? They're going to say so much in bonds, so much in stocks, whether or not the individual stocks or mutual funds. What's that thought process that goes on in those firms when they're trying to pigeonhole a certain demographic of a customer?
Specifically speaking, I think that, look, it definitely comes down to the investor profile and their risk profile. Now, not everyone's going to be the same, but I'm sure that if a client or investor were to come to me, maybe some of my advice might be different to someone else that they go to. And look, unfortunately, it does come down to a bit of experience and personal opinion. In saying that, I do believe that the customer is, or the investor is, centric. So your role there simply at the end of the day is to make money for the client. There's no question about it, whether it's...
Like here in the U.S., a rule of thumb that they'll use when they're just talking in general to potential customers or in a little seminar or something like that, it's sort of, I don't know the exact phrasing of it, but let's just say it's sort of like an inverse to your age. So if you're say you're 35 years away from retirement, then maybe 65% or more of your portfolio will be aggressive. And, you know, and then as you get closer to the retirement, the aggressive part shrinks up and they're putting you more into fixed income kind of things. Is that accurate so far?
Sure. So you're allocating it based on their risk.
Right. So what do you think when the Goldmans of the world and the Merrill Lynches and all, they start to tell people about cryptocurrency? Do you think they might say 2% of the portfolio, 5% of the portfolio?
Look, that's a great question. I think a lot of the sort of bigger players or the bigger investment banks that are out there, there's a bit of reputational risk that's here also, because the last thing they want to be doing is advising them and saying, look, put your money all in Litecoin or whatever altcoin that is out there, and all of a sudden the proverbial hits the fan. So there's a lot of reputational risk. There may be a sort of section or a portfolio of their clientele that, you know, is or does like that sort of high risk aspect, and they'll be sort of privy to that type of advice that's provided. But look, someone who's of age, who's only got a few years left to retirement, maybe needs some type of sort of portfolio to establish from an income perspective. You know, why would you be advising them on sort of?
Could you see a general market just in global or nationally in a year and a half if the investment products were there, where maybe 2% of the assets under management were in cryptocurrency?
I'm confident in saying that it'll probably be a little bit more.
Okay. One story we talked about, and I'm sorry if any of you want to jump in, let me know. But we had a story last week about Bank of America. They'd just gotten the patents for their own cryptocurrency exchange. And I would project that in the same way they own Merrill Lynch, if you have your Bank of America account, your savings, your checking, you get your Merrill Lynch account, you can move money back and forth, you can borrow on margin from your Merrill Lynch to finance, to pay for some kind of bill immediate in your through your checking account. Are you seeing a world where a Bank of America or the other big financial banks are going to offer that whole array for, say, a customer like me, where I could put my cryptocurrency there and move back and forth between their different products?
Yes, I do. I think the issue, though, that we have here is that, like I explained around the sort of reputational aspect, that a lot of the bigger banks need, let's say, professionals like you gentlemen that are here in the studio.
Somebody come in?
I think he's out there in the waiting room, Henry.
They're coming in.
Well, look, I say that from a point of view where probably a lot of the staff that's within a lot of these bigger sort of investment firms, you know, haven't had that focus from, let's say, 4, 5, 6, you know, 10 years ago, to when really this started to kick off, maybe in the last sort of 2 to 3 years, or even the last 12 months. So there's a lot of these overnight, what they call type of advisors that are saying that they know, and they're probably working for a lot of these sort of bigger investment firms. Nothing sort of against them, but you know, they'll probably get away with it from because of the fact that they're under that banner. But really, they need someone who's going to be there, who can roll up the sleeves, who knows or has been in this particular market for quite a number of years. Because you really need to be sort of steering that ship.
Alec, when it goes to banks handling packages or investment corporations like Merrill Lynch and so forth, they're going to be very risk adverse themselves, and they're going to cite what they regard as trustworthy as opposed to high risk. And when they rate risk, it's from very high to very low to somewhere in between. And there's going to have to be something for the average Joe who doesn't know what an algorithm looks like. So when the Russians are undoing algorithms all the time, and we're trying to figure out what an algorithm is, we're in left field, and they're hitting home runs constantly. And this is where this country is. So when you're selling something that seems like pie in the sky for the dumbass coming in late, it is. It's pie in the face.
Yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, look, I totally agree. You're basically just accommodating for a large sector, and you just want to sort of get a lot of this sort of market share that's out there.
So the nature of what I said all that was, what do you do to cite, you know, if Bitcoin is the gold crypto, it's the gold crypto because it's all of the electronics are built into it. The cost of each coin has been all, everything's nailed down. How do people trust the same thing in the other coins?
Look, that is, that's the million dollar question. You know, that's the million dollar question, and that's, yeah. Look. It's once again we come to it because it's that a herd mentality. He's getting on it. Why shouldn't I get on it?
Lemmings is another word.
All right. Pick this up. Do you have
I do have a quick question. Earlier on, you said about Dash being so expensive in that, and I was kind of thinking about, you know, there's a limited supply in that. Do you foresee some of these the more expensive ones like Bitcoin Cash, Dash, and those becoming more of a transfer of means for the big larger banks, and then something like Verticoin or one of the smaller ones that has a large, huge coin count becoming more of for the average day Joe?
We're gonna keep the audience in suspense on that question.
Yes, that's right.
Over the break. We've been speaking and will continue to speak with Alec with a K, Trepkovsky, private equities advisor and one of the people that helped bring the cryptocurrency Stash into existence in the marketplace. Also, we want to remind you that we have a meetup coming up December 30th at Mocha Joe's. Now, the last couple of weeks we've been telling you it's going to start at 4 p.m., but the response is so big that I think we're going to need more time in the setup and to get people started and to accommodate everybody. So we're actually going to be starting at 3:30. I'll be changing that on the meetup.com website later this afternoon or this evening, but it will be at 3:30. We're still going to have Alex Solis. He's going to give a presentation, sort of a mini presentation of what he advises people about at Solis Digital Assets. Goldbug One, a.k.a. Andy, will be there. He'll probably be showing his latest charts there. Augie, I hope, will be there, and he will provide his commentary if he can get over his shyness. And hopefully maybe even one of the executives from Byte Federal ATM Company will be there. And we will get all that. We'll find out more about that after the break. You're listening to The Henry Raines Show. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Byte Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Byte Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Byte Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Byte Federal ATM near you. Go to ByteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's ByteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on The Henry Raines Show.
I drink a cup of coffee and stuff to comb it out my hair. I drink 40 cups of coffee. Some people really love their coffee. But you'll experience much more to love than just the coffee at Mocha Joe's. The perfect spot for family and friends to relax with casual dining or enjoy the pastries and gourmet coffee shops at 3633 Cortez Road, West Bradenton. It will be love at first bite 7 days a week at Mocha Joe's. Thursday is prime rib night. Friday, all-you-can-eat fish. And don't forget the world-famous $4.99 Saturday burger night. Vegetarian? On a gluten-free diet? You won't be left out at Mocha Joe's. There's something for everybody at Mocha Joe's. 3633 Cortez Road West. Don't believe me? Then call them up and ask for yourself at 941-753-7094. Open Sunday to Wednesday for breakfast and lunch. Thursday to Saturday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Party cups of coffee waiting for you to come home.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Mocha Joe's. They've got the Christmas jams going on in the coffee shop. Come in and try one of the delicious winter flavors on a chilly night. Pumpkin spice latte, the mega delicious chai tea latte, or favorite, the chocolate mint combination and the Andes mint mocha. Look forward to seeing you all there.
It's the Henry Ains Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, heard every Saturday, 12:05 p.m. to 1:30 p.m., reminding you about the meetup at Mocha Joe's on Saturday, December 30th, now starting at 3:30 to accommodate all the people that are saying they're going to show up there. In the studio, we have Augie, the contrarian. We have a.k.a. Andy Goldbug1 from TradingView.com. We have Alex Solis from Solis Digital Investments. And then the special surprise guest from the other side of the planet, Alec Toprosky. He is the private equities advisor currently with Black Pearl Capital Partners, but he helped to launch Australia's first global cryptocurrency called Stash. Andy had just asked him a question before the break. If he could quickly summarize it, we'll get back to the question.
I was looking at some of these larger coins that have a high market cap, also have a high price on them, and a low coin count. I kind of see them as being used between major banks or somebody that has a lot of money that, you know, you don't want to have, you know, 10 million coins of Ripple to have $100,000. You want to have a couple coins that have some serious money. So almost like a $1,000 bill coin. Do you see that type of thing for some of the larger ones and coins like Vertacoin and that are, you know, less expensive, being more the everyday used coin for purchasing coffee and stuff like that? Because I just want to hear your opinion on that.
Yeah, for sure. I think from that perspective, maybe the lower price type of coins are the ones that people maybe might feel a bit more comfortable, but look, it's a lower entry price. So from a lower entry price, you know, maybe there's not as much sort of volatility that is there. And look, if they put, you know, a couple hundred bucks, they lose it or not. I don't think it'll be such a big thing. Look, the higher end coins, you know, like your Dash that you said, I think those ones maybe have proven maybe over time that there's possibly a bit of stability that's there, and there's a bit of history. So with that history, you know, comes with a bit of pedigree as well. And maybe, you know, people might sort of think that they'll be able to sort of capitalize on that, on that history itself.
And if you've been captured in your imagination by Alec, you can find out more about him at two different websites. About him personally at alekt.com.au, alekt.com.au. You'll see more of his professional side there. And then if you want to find out about the currency that we've been talking about, Stash, the Australian global cryptocurrency, go to stashpay.io. Augie had a question.
Yeah, the reason I brought up Dash, and I misunderstood the word Stash for Dash, so they are...
No, they have different functions.
So that may be a good thing to explain, but Dash seems to be get the stabilizing effects that people like to hear, because when they advertise free talk, they talk about stability in so many words. You can trust this. This is a good, stable investment. Come to us. We'll explain it for you. We'll help you, blah, 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 blah. What does Stash do?
Okay, so Stash, Australia's first global cryptocurrency. Basically, what we've done is we've utilized the best features of...
And excuse me for interrupting. Can you tell us what the price is of that so we can put it relative to these other ones?
Sure, you know? Sure, sure. So it's about to list very soon. Entry price, so it was previously on a pre-ICO. Now it went to the ICO. Distribution's about to be completed over the coming days and about to list on our preferred exchange. Entry price was around the 10-cent USD mark. It's quite new to the Australian public. It's an actual crypto, and where we see the value add is it's got the best features of, well, it takes the best features of your Dash, Zcash, Ethereum, and Bitcoin, and obviously we know that there's some features behind the scenes with a lot of those guys that need improving. And then we've taken the worst features as well and then used those to create what we believe is a coin that has greater transaction power, greater speed, much more privacy as well. So we're trying to incorporate, or are looking to then incorporate, ZK Snarks, which is the full privacy.
Why more privacy? I mean, not that it shouldn't be, but why do you say you can agree to provide that?
Well, at the end of the day, look, it's we're trying to get away from this old system of running money, and not that it's meant to be used for anything untoward. But what we feel is look, if you've worked hard for something that is yours, I wouldn't want any Joe Blow sort of knowing what I'm doing with
the reputation's at stake, of course. I mean, that's the underlying fact. If you're selling off things and promising things and so on, and things fall through the floor, a lot of people are going to be ready to shoot you.
Look, I did bring my bulletproof vest here in the U.S., so...
Well, I mean, everybody knows the risk, you know, and I think you guys are just doing the crowdfunding, is that correct?
Or? Yeah, so we've just finished that.
I'm on the website, I see that. I don't see the secondary offering that you're talking about on this.
Oh, okay, so if you actually go down towards the bottom of the website itself, it'll actually show what the main features are. And look,
when you said you're going to have another offering of it before it gets listed on the exchange, if I understood correctly.
Oh, no. Look, the ICO has finished. Distribution is about to take place within the next couple of days, and so we're just finalising the contract.
What exchange will it be on?
So we're just finalising the contract with a couple of the exchanges themselves, so hopefully that'll be completed by next week.
I'm sure you can't tell us the exchanges by name, but will we recognise them here in America?
Yeah, there'll be a couple of known exchanges there as well.
I'm sorry. I want to get back to some of the things I'm looking at on the website, and because I'm seeing instantaneous transaction using Stash Swift. Now, Swift, we would be... No, that word for what financial institutions use to settle, is that just a coincidence that that's connected with the word Stash, or?
Yeah, so we've just used that as our way to say, well, look.
It's a descriptive term.
Yeah, correct. Exactly right. Okay. Exactly right.
And so would this be used in a way similar to Ripple is being used with financial institutions?
So what we're basically trying to do is make it a holistic currency. So a peer-to-peer transaction where it's set up over the sort of next 9 months. We're going to because we're currently under the Ethereum block, or it's going to be under the Ethereum block, and we're going to separate and have our own block ourselves, and it'll be set up through a separate wallet. So it is going to be used predominantly for transactions on a day-to-day basis.
Holistic. And the other thing I'm curious about, the term you use, holistic, and I understand the word holistic. However, you said something about being approved. So you have regulation that you have to look at within Australia. Am I right?
That's correct, yes.
Which is what's happening with all of these cryptocurrencies. They're being looked at from two agencies in the United States, the SEC for one, for sure, and very much so, and the IRS is the other one. So people are not going to come away untouched, in my guess.
Sure, sure. Look, it's just unfortunate that within the ICO phase, that unfortunately that U.S. Residents and citizens weren't able to participate in the raising.
Let me see if I can make sure the audience is understanding the functionality of this compared to some of the other ones, and myself understanding the functionality. So you said it was going to be used for transactions, peer-to-peer transactions. Is that to transact some other cryptocurrency into a different cryptocurrency or some fiat to cryptocurrency or just transacting stash for stash?
More so sort of transacting on a day-to-day basis for everyday goods. Transacting, you know,
material with products.
Yeah, correct. So look, that's and the crypto space here in a, well, not here but in Australia is it's quite prominent, but there's no one out there that's sort of taken the bull by the horns.
Now, Stellar, I guess they've shortened from Stellar Lumens down to just Stellar. They have a protocol where they're theoretically, because I haven't used it, you can have somebody with Swiss francs, U.S. dollars, and Stellar facilitates that transaction of sending money in the appropriate currency back and forth. And it seems to me, as I understand it, it comes in and gets converted to Stellar, and then the Stellar converts to the next currency. Is it anything like that?
No, it's not.
Okay. That was a quick question.
Yeah. One thing that, you know, and I hate to interrupt you, Henry, but I'm dying to ask this question. I just got to ask it. I'm sorry. You know, when I look at a cryptocurrency, because like you said, there's not much fundamentals to base anything on. I'm always looking at, you know, who is the team? You know, where do they come from? You know, and that was one of the reasons I like Ripple.
You wrote a very good article today about that. People should go to, where should they go to find that?
TradingView.com. You know, I'm on there. But, you know, do they have a working product? Do they have market penetration? And are they marketing? To me, that's really huge as far as, because you have nothing else to base them on. So with that said, what is your plan for marketing, and how are you intend to get it out there so that people are actually using it in real-world applications?
And yeah, that sure. Might also be appropriate to ask you about the Stash debit card that I see on the website.
Yeah, sure. So, look, that's within our sort of timeline, I think maybe about quarter three or quarter four. That's obviously an option there for us, but with what we see sort of going forward, a lot of people are using their phones. You know, are they going to be looking to have a card, you know, just slipped in their pocket? Maybe not. If you look at the numbers in China use WeChat, which is sort of similar to, like your Amazon and your sort of Google here in the US. 80% of transactions are undertaken through WeChat. These guys don't carry wallets. You know, it's basically done through their phone. So the option is there for that Stash debit card. Look, it's more of something sort of cosmetic that can be there as well. We've put that out. It could be an opportunity there for us to sort of market a bit more through that.
How holistic?
Well, look, banks are using cards. You know, other investment banks sort of use cards. It's a way to sort of identify yourself as well.
Building trust.
Building trust. Okay. So to give you a perfect example, Stash, we actually sponsored the Australian World Mini Football Team, which just competed in the World Cup in Tunisia. So we had our logo there on the back. And look, that was, and if you have a look at the website as well, look, our names are on there. You know, there's links through to our LinkedIn. People can see me. I'm up front.
You're wide open.
Wide open.
Okay. So the reason I go there is because there seems to be an attitude among some, make all the money you can and get the hell out, almost like a Ponzi scheme, get rich quick and run away. And I think there's hell to pay for that.
Sure.
And the whole Bitcoin thing, whatever is good about it, is imperiled by that. And I think, and whether it's in the United States or anywhere else, since it's a worldwide operation, so to speak.
All right. I'm looking at the clock, and we, of course, have thrown out most of the rundown now, but it's worth it to get this kind of insight. But I want to build off what Augie is saying into something something that I caught this week. Most of the trading in cryptocurrencies is done in Japan and Korea, and the use of leveraged buying of cryptocurrencies in Japan exceeds the level it is in the U.S. or Europe, I assume Australia probably too. Really, it seems like an excessive amount, and it's by retail investors for the most part. So by leveraged, I mean they are borrowing on margin. And if anybody's tried to settle on a Bitcoin transaction lately, you don't know. It's not like trading on your stock portfolio on Merrill Lynch or Ameritrade or wherever it is. it doesn't happen right when you want it to happen. So you could be getting a margin call and you couldn't execute. You could wind up in a very difficult spot there and pretty much be wiped out. Is that, that's where I see, when Augie comes on every week and gives his point of view, I look for different places where the bubble might start to look a little weak, if we're unavailable. And the amount of leveraged trading in Japan looks that way to me. How do you see that?
I think it's a big risk. I think those that look at taking on, look, don't get me wrong, we're creating a market. And for those that are experienced or are immersed in the markets, they're not always going to get it right, but their winners definitely going to sort of far outweigh their losers, and that's predominantly what you want to be doing. Whereas if you're tiptoeing around the tulips, as they say, and you're on today, and then all of a sudden in the next couple of days you might sort of look at placing other sort of long or short position. Look, it's not really the way, because the markets are obviously operating 24 hours. That's probably the best way that you are going to be losing money. And this is where we come back to that emotional and rational type of trading. All of a sudden someone loses and the thought process is, well, I've got to get this back. And they go and make some other type of trade that's not really within their investment strategy or their scheme.
The word marketing is a promotion, is what marketing really amounts to, selling. Like a car is sold by a car salesman or insurance salesman, these people are of low reputation. So if we're just selling for the sake of selling, the risk is pretty high. Your country seems to protect its people. 16 million of you, I think, are Australian, right?
Actually, 24 and a half.
You're up to 24 now. Well, the point is, it's a small country.
It is.
You know, so you're a country against 50 states, of which some of them are larger, California being one. So the point I'm making is that the trust element is huge, and yet you're not bothered by the controls of your country.
Look, the trust element obviously has to be there. There's no question about it. We are from a regulatory perspective. Quite strong. Look, especially from a banking point of view, four of our banks in Australia are in the top 20 sort of banks around the world. But look, there are tight regulations. Politically, we're quite stable as well. Yes, they do want to protect the investors that are out there. But at the end of the day, look, it comes down to the client whether they're prepared to do this or not, and that's the risk that they take.
All right. Well, we've been very lucky to have the generosity of Alex Troposky with his time here, and he'll still be around to jump in if he wants, but we have another guest coming up in the next half hour. I want to remind you, if you want to find out more about either Stash or Alec, you can go to the website alect.com.au. That's alekt.com.au. And that's stashpay.io, stashpay.io. You're listening to the Henry Raines Show, WWPR, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay. On the other side of the break, we'll be talking to a Tampa Bay businesswoman who, along with a little advice from Alec, is going to tell us about what their plans are for the cryptocurrency market and how they're going to market to that. You're listening to The Henry Raines Show.